Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Luca Perry, CEO of The Learning Future, a strategy and professional learning organization that helps schools, educators, and other organizations thrive in a constantly changing world. He's a keynote speaker, a podcast host, a learner, a linguist, and an award-winning educator who's been named one of the top 100 innovators in Australia. Luca, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Hello, team. Great to be with you.
This is a world-class, global-trotting episode, Ryan. Luca, we are so excited to have you here. And so much of your work is focused on preparing kids, preparing educators, preparing systems for the future. And you've written that although the future is unknowable, that it's an uncertain thing, that it's clear that, quote, our future will be one filled with lifelong, life-deep, and life-wide learning that must unlock both human and planetary flourishing. All right, so let's unpack that a little bit, because I think we all know what lifelong learning is, but life deep, life wide, what does that entail?
First, it's good to be with you. As we see the accelerating impacts of exponential technologies, of the shifts happening around us, I think we're called almost to return to the things that make us most uniquely human. I come from the position as an educator and a learner that things really are too big to know. So the question are, what are the things that matter most across kind of the arc of our lives? And so life deep are the things that we feel the most passionate about. I'm quite obsessed by an inquiry into unique creativity, you know, a question that I love to sit with and ask both educators, myself, learners that I encounter is, what is yours to do uniquely? And that's a far more powerful question than how good are you at this thing? It's my favorite to say, like, where are you good? And I think that idea of self-understanding and hence my obsession to delve into the world of social and emotional learning in particular is around the depth. The other thing is, you know, like if we were to consider our lives or our skill set, our knowledge set as a canvas, how painted is that canvas? How many of our edges might we have explored through the beautiful learning opportunities that we get, either through formal education in K-12 and vocational higher education, and then in the informal and the non-formal sectors as well. And that idea that actually a life well lived isn't just one where you know a lot of things. It's that you feel uniquely positioned to contribute both economically and socially into a field, something that hopefully brings you alive. And my view ultimately, I think, is that passion over time can predict performance. Someone that's truly passionate about learning into a particular thing or contributing or building things in a certain way, that is the kind of educational future that I'm quite interested in us exploring, in us designing, especially when we look around at, I think, some of the challenges that are not just unique for unique communities, but actually, I think, universal.
So you've brought that sensibility of depth and humanity and lives well lived to what you call the learning future. Tell us about that. What does the learning future do? How exactly does it work to enable human thriving?
So we're a strategy and professional development firm based in Sydney, Australia. And the reason we exist is that we believe learning is actually the key vehicle for liberation. We believe it is the thing that can unlock the potential in all of us. And in my view, help people to create lives that they want to live. And I think the challenge is we are in this moment where we have inherited many different mental models, many different practices, processes, policies even, that aren't in service of human flourishing or thriving. And so our work quite directly is to work alongside schools, education systems, organizations, to help them become more fully human. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, what that means, I think intrinsically, all of us have a sense of when we're seen, heard, and valued, and when we're contributing, you know, in this place where we find struggle, but that it's deeply productive struggle. We try to apply human-centered design, or I would frame it almost now as humanity-centered design or life-centered design to move beyond the individual paradigm. And we use a lot of design processes to help schools understand who are we, where do we want to get to, visit the future, as we would like to say, and then to shift course, powerfully return to the present, and then what are the steps required to get there? And so often I think they're the same things. Increase the level of agency, to have a sense of self-determined learning. I've heard said many times, it's not what you know, it's what you do with what you know. And I agree, but I'd like to extend that and say, it's not just what you know, and it's not just what you do with what you know, it's who you are and who you become as you do things with what you know. You know, self-transformation, I think, is the goal, as is system transformation towards the world that we want to live in, that we want our children to live in.
As we think about our own learning, right, whether it's the three of us or anyone listening to this podcast, and we think about our learning futures and what it means to be uniquely creative, to be humanity-centered, as you said, to embrace curiosity and wholeness and questioning, it's often paralyzing to think about that as individuals and even harder to think about systems supporting that type of change. Can you talk a little bit about, as you think about the design processes that lead to systems thinking in this way, how we get our minds around that and how leaders of schools and leaders of educational organizations get us to that place?
You know, I was an educator and a school principal in a very remote part of Australia working with First Nations, who have, of course, in the Australian context, tens of thousands of years of ongoing cultural processes that are incredibly rich. It's so interesting for me to be able to reflect on my journey from the past and now the future. And so I think it's quite universal. It is terrifying to not know. But of course, that is the new world order. Things are too big to know. Things are more complex now than they've ever been before. You know, and we can just look at some of the geopolitical crises that are taking place right now, tragically, in our world. And we can look at some of the health crises. Unfortunately, COVID is still playing out and the aftermath of that as well around its impact on mental health and well-being here in Australia, not least of all overseas. So when we consider the future world, it's having the courage to trust that we can really only surrender to some of those aspects. We can't try to control them. What we need to seek is clarity around our direction. I've heard said, which I quite like, the fastest way to the future we want is not a straight line. And that might be absolutely true. When it comes to an organization, I think this is when we start to look at almost the organizational consciousness. Like, are we a command and control system, which is this is what you need to do? And in some ways that can be very dehumanizing. You know, for example, don't trust educators to do their work as well as they could. And I feel that kind of accountability or punitive type model, I think, is completely damaging to the human spirit and innovative practice versus a liberatory system, one in which we kind of inform up. And I think there are some really interesting emerging examples around the world, not least of all what's happening with Remake Learning and in Pittsburgh, which I was very fortunate to visit last year. You know, is this idea is how do we build this sense of a learning ecosystem or learning landscape, which is deeply interconnected, in which a human being can be supported to step into the unknown continually. It's what we as teachers ask young people to do every single day. And that's why I think using futures tools like we do at the Learning Future is so powerful, because it enables us to kind of sever our connection to some of those, to reimagine, to kind of be playful, to be speculative in our design.
Speaking of following a line into the future and not necessarily a straight one, Luca, you yourself have visited more than 80 countries. You speak 5 languages. You've 2 master's degrees, one in instructional leadership, another in applied linguistics. We're curious for you, what drives the desire for all that learning and why is such a range of learning important to you?
Are you calling me a nerd? Is that what you're saying?
A little bit. You're a nerd, but I'm sort of jealous.
Do you know, learning for me is like the most powerful expression of the human spirit. I have to say, by the way, on the languages front, I was monolingual at age 18 when I finished high school. Well, I lived in Europe for a year and a half, and I realized that as an Australian, a monolingual Australian at that point, you know, how I had limited my own expression and understanding of the beautiful diversity of our world. And so when I went to university, I just delved into learning modern Greek, which is partially my ancestry. and Spanish, and then living in the outback, I learned Pijinjara and Yankunjara. And it's like the most beautiful expression of the human spirit is to just be deeply curious about our world. And it's something that our young people fully get and understand. You know, be they a two-year-old always asking why, which is one of those beautiful words, or, you know, an eight-year-old that's really curious about a particular aspect of society. And so I think cultivating curiosity has been one of the secrets for my obsession with knowledge and understanding. And I, not to be too philosophical about it, but again, if I use futures tools and I kind of step back from my own life and then try to look at the arc of it, you know, let's hope that it's a good 90-year life. At the end of it, what do I want to have experienced? How might I want to have contributed? And for me, that means living in a pretty deliberate and intentional way, almost in an immediate way. If this is all we've got, how would I like to engage in the world? And I realized as a 19-year-old traveling around Europe with a backpack on no money that education was that key lever, I think, to unlock ourselves, to expand ourselves. And so I've just kept applying myself to the world and for the world in some way and trying to be of the world, you know, not just a student of my own history and psychology, but actually, you know, a student of the world and to try to be the best learner, not the best knower. And I think that kind of confident humility, which I heard from, think again, from Adam Grant, that's a really powerful frame. How do I be confident? How do we be confident about what we think is uniquely ours to contribute, but also deeply humble and say, I'm not sure about this. And for me to consider that somehow I've quote unquote made it is delusional in the extreme. Yeah, I mean, clearly an avid traveler, a linguist, and deeply an educator, I feel completely at home in conversations about learning and human development. Because I really believe it's mine to do, you know.
Well, I take back all the nerd talk. That was a very cool answer.
And Luca, you've brought so many people along with you to examine your curiosity about the world. And you've brought people along through your podcast. You've brought people along through your presentations and the things that you write. And you've physically brought people along in study tours that you've organized or that you are organizing, taking people to places from Scandinavia to Barcelona, Spain, and all stops in between and on different continents. What is it that you've seen? What is it that you hope people see that you see? And what do you hope to learn?
It's really just understanding that no one really knows, but everyone has a unique perspective. And it's moving from this idea of perception to perspective that is incredibly powerful. None of us see the same world. We see the world uniquely through our past experiences and in some ways the heuristics that have developed as well around our mental models and how they deploy themselves. And so there's something so powerful by sitting next to a school leader who's leading a school in Copenhagen, which happens to be a very innovative school, fully team-based pedagogy. There's something uniquely powerful about hearing another person's perception and then that becoming a broader perspective. This is, I think, why empathy is such an incredible tool to cultivate. And I tell you, like doing that cross-culturally or across any kind of different identity marker, I think is so powerful. I mean, I used to have board meetings as a school leader in an outback school with the board, you know, sitting outside in a circle in the shade on red dirt and listening in Pijinjara, recording it and having my co-principal there able to translate when that was necessary. I mean, I learned so much from those moments, far more I could have from reading every single educational text. It's why I think even in a virtual world, there's something still unique about two people sitting down in physical form and having a conversation or walking through a school or through a learning setting and really seeing how that learning is unfolding, how it's manifesting, how it's being designed and delivered. That's why I think it's so powerful. I'm also curious about what holds us in stasis around the evolution that we need in the roles that we play. You know, how do we move from being the knower, the instructor, to a learning architect and an activator or facilitator, a holder of a process? I really think that design view, one which values agency, values a sense of belonging, which looks at the unique creativity of human beings, that cultivates discernment, in particular in a world where we can't trust what we see now, and then that E for embodiment, this is kind of the new alphabet that we like to play with, we're not just to move our brain around. Learning thinking actually is beyond the brain in distributed and in embodied and situated ways. So that's kind of what we're most interested to see, is like, how are you tackling these challenges, which we're also tackling, but in your unique way? And from that, I think we become better placed to be confidently humble and to try to do what's ours to do in our unique learning community.
This is Ryan Rudzeski along with Greg Baer. We're talking with Luca Perry, CEO of The Learning Future and host of The Learning Future podcast. Luca, you just mentioned E for embodiment, and we actually want to ask you about this A to Z alphabet you've created that identifies some of the key trends and some of the key themes that are essential to the kinds of learning we've been talking about. Some of these letters will be familiar to our listeners. A is for agency, B is for belonging, J is for joy. These are the sorts of things we talk about all the time on Remaking Tomorrow. But some of the letters are really surprising. We want to ask you to elaborate, if you would, on just a few letters. You just mentioned E for embodiment. What about V for vitality?
Oh, these are all of my favorite words, I have to say. You know, again, maybe it's the language nerd in me, but you know, I think words are the way that we make sense of our world. Language is the key meaning-making mechanism that we have. And I often think if you talk to somebody over time, especially the questions they ask, or might I say don't ask, will reveal their mental model. It'll kind of reveal things about where they are on their own journey as a learner, as a leader, as a human being. And so this was just a kind of playful way of us mapping what we think that the underlying principles could be, might be, for kind of a more thriving future of learning. I love the word vitality. And the reason I love it is because to be vital means to be truly alive. And we now have got all this work around longevity that Peter Attila is, of course, leading, or Andrew Huberman at Stanford through the Huberman podcast, you know, looking at what is the learning science, but also the longevity science telling us about how we might want to live our lives and certainly construct organizations for work and kind of spaces for learning. Vitality to me, it has factors that we don't talk about enough in school. So for example, sleep quality and quantity is part of vitality. So is movement and exercise, and critically so is nutrition. And for us to somehow assume that those factors don't impact on the learning journey, I think is naive in the extreme. But it's just because it's not a question that we've asked in the past. And I think in my journey in particular, in working in different communities as an educator, seeing the impact of those vitality factors when they're not in place has really called me to try to understand how we remember, i.e. put back together, what it means to be human. And so thinking about not just the cognitive or the academics that I think have driven our learning systems, but also the physical aspects, that we have a body, that we embody. Are we in it? Are we present? Are we viscerally in this present moment, or are we stuck in a past rumination, or are we worried about the future, which can lead to an anxious type of experience? And so vitality is something that I think in some of the work we've done with systems, we've put into the policies and even kind of the learning frameworks. One other thing in this kind of A to Z alphabet that we're really interested in is the case for belonging. Now, what's remarkable is we all have the same nervous system. It's something that for all humans, regardless of any other intersectionality, we have a sympathetic and a parasympathetic nervous system. And we have a vagus nerve, the wandering nerve that wraps around a lot of our internal organs. And that's actually how we can up and down regulate. And what's wild to me is that we don't know. The human beings leading thousands of young people in this enormous system that we call a school haven't had access to this type of knowledge. And for me, these are the types of principles and constructs that we have to place at the center of our learning processes so that we have this multidimensional understanding of human growth and development rather than, well, how do you go on the test? And then purpose, you know, and this can be a spiritual question depending on your worldview, you know, but what do you think your life's for? Or what are you being drawn to most? You know, that's a really powerful question that I think we should bring back to the center of our work to live a purposeful life. And to do that, we must create purposeful learning. And the A to Z alphabet was a playful way of us thinking about, here are some concepts that perhaps can take us closer to that future.
Luca, I want to ask you about a few more of those letters, and we're going to do so as part of a way to wind things down in this episode. We're going to do a game with words. You love words, and I'm going to push you to some brevity in a lightning round. Are you ready for this? Are you ready to play along, Luca?
I don't know about brevity, but I'll do what I can.
I'm going to start with two of your letters from your alphabet, X.
X is the unknown. And so increasingly it's us being able to step into what's unknown. And so to do that, we need some confidence to trust ourselves.
How about Z or Z for zest?
Zest. Nothing was ever achieved without enthusiasm, as the quote says. And so don't be afraid to be too much, to show your passion and to be zestful about the thing that you care the most about.
Your favorite word in a non-English language?
I'm going to say ngapaji ngapaji, which is from Pidgin Jetta, the Western Desert language of Australia. And it means a mutually beneficial relationship, a give-give relationship.
The most memorable moment from your travels around the world?
Walking through the souk in Petra, which is the Greek word for stone or rock, especially because I'm an Indiana Jones fan, and just seeing the treasury rise up in front of me. That's one of the memories I'll never forget.
The place you most want to visit that you've not yet seen?
Oh, it's actually Antarctica.
Best way for people to find out more about the work you're doing?
Just use a Google search for Luca Parry or thelearningfuture.com and you'll find us.
Luca, before we go, one more question for you, please. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I think it's just to take a breath. And the reason I'd say that is that in pausing for a moment, what we do is we expand and kind of remember the agency that we have in our lives. So instead of responding too quickly to something that happens, that could often be a heuristic or it can be a patterned subconscious response, it's just to call yourself back into presence and to respond intentionally. And especially, I think, in this very complex and often tragic world that we see around us, there is so much beauty and kindness that can be unearthed. And I think it's to remember that. Just take a breath and pause, especially when you feel overloaded, and see if you can call into being the person that you really are, which in my view is someone that cares about that young person in front of you, your child, your student, the peer that you're having a conversation with, or the neighbor. Call in some of the Mr. Rogers legacy as well. And this really is something that can make our world an incredibly beautiful place.
Thanks again to Luca Parry, CEO of The Learning Future and host of The Learning Future podcast. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.